an Osho talk. Turning In, number 7.
Bankai said, "What I tell people about is nothing special. It's the unborn, enlightened, no mind, innate in everyone. What is it about? While you are all here, listening to my sermon, when a dog barks outside the temple, you know it is a dog. And when a crow caws, you know it is a crow. And also you can distinguish the colors black and white, and see the difference between men and women. Even though you are not thinking about hearing dogs or crows, or seeing black, white, men or women during the talk, nonetheless, right here you can see and hear them all, before conceptually discriminating them. Then even if 1,000 or 10,000 people should tell someone that a dog's bark is a crow's call, that person would hardly be deceived by them. Isn't this enlightened no-mind, with its inconceivable qualities of clear awareness, something to be grateful for? Because people don't know that everyone has such wonderful qualities and powers, they get confused by one thing and another. That confusion ultimately arises from self-importance. Self-importance means, for example, that you get angry and upset when you hear your neighbor criticize you, and only dislike and maltreat that person. Also, when you hear your neighbor praise you, you think well of that person and act nicely. This too is because of self-importance. Considering the root source of this self-importance, when people are born, they have no bad thoughts of hatred or liking for anyone. It is just that, as they grow up, they learn and cultivate various bad things and bad thoughts by seeing and hearing them, piling them up into mental habits. Always putting these mental habits to use, various kinds of confusion and error begin.
Manisha, before I discuss the very important man of Zen, Bankei, and his remarkable statements, I have to introduce Avirbhava's new guards for the museum. Before I do it, I will say to you something about insects as worshipped by many people as gods. This museum is going to be a hilarious phenomenon. It is going to be a mirror to you what humanity has been doing. Its priests, its so-called wise men, all driving humanity into different directions of stupidity. But when a religious garbage is poured upon anything, poor people, poor masses believe in it. And this is not only about the ancient world. Man has worshipped almost anything and is still worshipping almost anything without considering it at all that this is very undignified. That you are destroying your own humanity . My researchers have found since the earliest times certain creatures of various insects species have been considered to be expressions of God. According to the legends of the Teton Indians in America, the spider was the first creature of life to attain maturity. Particularly the gray spiders were heralded as the patron saints of traveling. The Indians would stamp on a spider before setting out on the trail and pray to its spirit for a safe journey. A good idea. Released from the body, now the spirit can guide. I have been telling you before that there is a species of spiders that when a male and female spider are making love, the male spider becomes so drunk, so orgasmic, his long legs trembling, and the male spider starts eating him. By the time his orgasm is finished, he is finished. Somebody has informed me that there is another spider which is a little more intelligent. First he brings a fly as a present to the girlfriend. So while he is making love, she is eating the fly. just to save his own life, he has to eat something. Certainly an intelligent step. You also bring ice cream and roses and sweets and chocolates. The reason is the same. If you don't give the woman to eat something, she will eat you. Just let her chew something, she will not chew you. These spiders have also been considered to be incarnations of the spirit of fertility in certain primitive societies, including Polynesia and the Philippines. Butterflies were worshipped as family god in Samoa and were considered the incarnation of the bushman god, Kegan. Beetles have been considered holy since ancient times. In Egypt, the scarab or the dung beetle was worshipped as a direct descendant of the god Ra. Ra is the greatest god of the Egyptian religion. And the direct descendant is a dung beetle. Even today in southern Africa, the Hottentots sacrifice live sheep and cows to the glorious beetle. But remember also that in India, in the times of Rig Vedas, horses were sacrificed, cows were sacrificed, even men were sacrificed to please the gods. And who are the gods? Somebody is a monkey, somebody is an elephant, and man is sacrificed, killed, and eaten by the priests as a prasad, as God's gift. And this is being done to praise the gods so they don't become angry. Before I ask Avirbhava to bring her new additions to the museum, a little joke. Two cockroaches clod and crunch are enjoying dinner on a pile of garbage in Pune. Do you know, says Claude, that they have just built a new apartment building on Burning Ghats Road? Really? Says Crunch, munching on an old banana peel. Yes, says Claude, and the kitchen is so clean, there is not a speck of dust anywhere. In the refrigerator, everything is spotless. In fact, there is not a crumb of dirt in the whole place. Please, please, says Crunch, spitting out his banana peel, not while I am eating. Okay, Abir Baba, bring your things. Bankei said, what I tell people about is nothing special. That makes it special. Because ordinarily people saying ordinary things think that they are very special. Only a man who has attained to Buddhahood can make such a statement that what I tell people about is nothing special. It is just simple and ordinary. The desire to be special is the desire of the ignorant. The desire to be simple is the desire of the conscious. It is only the unconscious mind which creates the ego of being special. When that unconscious mind is gone, everything simply is. There is nothing extraordinary in it. He is saying it is the unborn enlightened, no mind innate in everyone. Whatever I am saying is to provoke the sleeping Buddha in everyone. It is everyone's inherent nature. How it can be special? It is another matter that millions have decided never to look in. That's why we have very few Buddhas in the world. But even then, it does not become a special thing. Those who are closing their eyes, keeping their back towards themselves, can turn in a single moment. In a single moment, the whole world can become a Buddha field. While you are all here listening to my sermon, when a dog barks outside the temple, you know it is a dog. And when a crow caws, you know it is a crow. And also you can distinguish the colors, black and white, and see the difference between men and women. Even though you are not thinking about hearing dogs or crows or seeing black, white men or women during the talk, nonetheless, right here you can see and hear them all before conceptually discriminating them. Then even if 1,000 or 10,000 people shall tell someone that a dog's bark is a crow's caw, that person would hardly be deceived by them. What he is saying is that one who has known his Buddhahood, even 10,000 people try to convince him that it is not so, he cannot be convinced. It is indubitably certain for him that his self nature is eternal and ultimate. But the question is, it should not be a belief, it should be an experience. If it is only a belief, then anybody can criticize it. A better argument, a better intelligence can destroy it completely. But if it is your experience, then the whole world can be on one side. Still you will say that I am experiencing it. Hence, it does not matter how many people are against me. No argumentation can destroy my confidence in my own experience. The philosophy is more concerned with argument, and following philosophy, religions have created theology, that is argument for God. That's exactly the meaning of theology, logic for God. But nobody has ever been able to prove logically the existence of God. Great treatises and very intelligent people have been involved in it. Zen has never made any theology or any philosophy. It is an existential approach, not intellectual. You have to experience it. No belief is needed. Once you know it, no argument can destroy it. Knowing is very simple. Getting from mind to no mind is within your reach. Becoming a witness of your thoughts is the simplest thing in the world. Even without knowing, you are witnessing them. When you say, I am feeling anger, what do you mean? If you don't witness anger, then how can you say, I am feeling anger or I am feeling headache? Who is feeling headache? There must be a witness beyond the head. There must be a witness beyond all your feelings, love, anger, hate, beyond all your thoughts, beyond all your beliefs. This witness is simply the miracle of Zen. Zen has pointed out to the very central fact that transforms man and brings him into a totally new world of eternity where death does not exist, where misery has never been heard, where suffering is unknown. On the contrary, only blessings. Only blissfulness. Only benediction. And a tremendous gratitude as a prayer to the whole existence in thankfulness is not this enlightened no mind with its inconceivable qualities of clear awareness something to be grateful for? Because people don't know that everyone has such wonderful qualities and powers, they get confused by one thing and another. That confusion ultimately arises from self-importance. Your all confusions are arising out of your desire to be important. You try to show that which you are not. You say things which you don't know. You advise people, although you don't follow those advices yourself. Khalil Gibran has a story. In a big city, there were many dogs. But one dog was a philosopher. It rarely happens such kind of disease to dogs, but once for a while, once for a change, there are exceptions. He continuously preached from morning till night to every dog that because of your barking, our whole doghood loses its dignity. Otherwise, we are the highest animals in the world. Just stop barking unnecessarily. The dogs were always very thankful to his advice, but said that what to do? A strange urge arises seeing a postman or a sannyasin or a policeman, anybody in uniform. Dogs are very much against uniforms. They seem to be very free thinkers. They don't want people to be in a crowd. They want everybody to be individual himself. Everybody respected the philosopher dog. He was thought to be the wisest of their species ever born. He never barked. But one night, a dark night, the dogs decided that he has been preaching for years and nobody listens. It makes us so ashamed, at least to give him peace. One night we should try to stop barking just for one night. It is going to be difficult, but hide into dark corners of his streets, into dark grooves, and keep control. It is only a question of few hours. And in the morning you will be free to bark. The philosopher went around, could not meet any god, he could not believe where all the dogs have disappeared. And there was such a silence, and nobody to teach, that suddenly a great urge of barking arose in him. Now he knew why he was not barking, because till morning to night all the energy was involved in teaching. There was no time neither energy to bark, and before everybody else how he could bark against his own philosophy. But now there was no dog, so the question of preaching was not there, neither was any witness that he barked against his own wisdom. So he walked and barked as much, because it is a lifelong repressed feeling. Nobody has heard such barkings. He went almost crazy. The whole city dogs who were hiding here and there slowly, slowly gathered by his side. And when they saw that their philosopher himself is barking, then there was an explosion. Thousands of dogs barking. And for the first time the philosopher felt his humbleness, that he is also a dog. Unnecessarily, he was harassing others. and harassing himself. The religions have done the same to men. They have harassed themselves, their followers, into all kinds of self-torture, into all kinds of unnaturalness. They have given the greed to be great saints. They have given the greed that you will be a beloved of God if you follow these principles. Nobody follows. All people have bad doors in their life. On the front door you will meet somebody else. On the back door you will meet somebody else. On the back door he is more natural. On the sitting room in the front door he is a gentleman, a lady. Hiding everything natural. But Zen wants you to be natural and not a split. Front door and back door should not be two doors. You should have only one face, your own original face, and you should be grateful for it that nature has given you tremendous opportunity to be creative, to be loving, to be silent, to be able to know the ultimate source of life. Nothing more can be asked. And everything is so easy if you simply drop your egoistic idea of being special. Self-importance means, for example, that you get angry and upset when you hear your neighbor criticize you, and only dislike and maltreat the person. Also when you hear your neighbor praise you, you think well of that person and act nicely. This too is because of self-importance. A man of simplicity will neither feel gratified by anybody's praise, nor will feel angry by anybody's anger. Those are their problems. Why you are unnecessarily taking them? Somebody is angry, he is burning into his own anger, into his own fire. Why you immediately jump in? Somebody is praising you and you immediately accept it, knowing perfectly well that nobody is going to praise you unless he has some purpose. The moment somebody says to you, "You are so beautiful, so intelligent," beware. That person wants to exploit you in some way or other. Otherwise, who has time to praise you and why? So whenever somebody says to you, you are so beautiful, immediately say, shut up. It is my problem, not your problem. Neither accept praise nor accept anger. And just remain attuned to your simplicity. Considering the root source of this self-importance, when people are born, they have no bad thoughts of hatred or liking for anyone. It is just that as they grow up, they learn and cultivate various bad things and bad thoughts by seeing and hearing them, piling them up into mental habits, always putting these mental habits to use, various kinds of confusion and error begin. Every child is born a Buddha. Then slowly, slowly, he starts imitating others. And as time passes, he forgets his simplicity, his Buddhahood. He is lost into the crowd, which is a vast jungle, in which he will meet all kinds of people but not a Buddha. He will imitate all kinds of people and will not think for a single moment that is life just imitation? And can imitation give you any joy? Just being a carbon copy? Unless you are original, simply yourself, you can never have joy enough to dance and sing, joy enough to be grateful to existence. But every child is driven into conditions. You should ask your conditions what you are doing and why you are doing, why you are smoking. Just because others are smoking. Why in a hot country you are wearing a tie? Because every gentleman when I was a professor in the university, I was continuously amazed. The city I was in was exactly in the center of India, very hot, and professors were putting ties and shoes and wearing clothes, coats, and perspiring. And I will say, who is telling you to do all these things? If you want to perspire, you can go to a sauna bath. But why 24-hour sauna bath is not good? But because the people who had ruling India for 300 years had come from cold countries, they had brought their habits, and the ruling party becomes an example. Whoever is ruling must be right. Even the British people living in India never dropped their habits, knowing perfectly that this is a hard country, carrying habits which they have cultivated in England is absolutely stupid. Not only they carried it, they taught in every school, college, university, to every bureaucrat, to all important posts of government, and nobody took care note that this is a hard country. One of my friends is scholar in Tibetan, wanted to go to Tibet. I said, you will not be able to survive. He said, why? I said, you are such an orthodox and stupid Brahmin. Both things go together. Unless you take a cold bath before sunrise and then do your puja, your worship, and then only you can take even a cup of tea. Before taking a bath, you cannot do anything. And do you know, in the Tibetan scriptures, it is said that at least once a year, everybody should have a bath. That too people don't follow. Who follows scriptures? But when it is written in the scripture, that means all things considered, at least one bath per year is not too much. He said, you unnecessarily create confusion. I am completely ready to go. I said, I see you after 3 days back. And the third day I received him on the airport. He looked very shy and ashamed. I said, what happened? He said, you were right. It is too cold. And without taking a bath, I cannot do my puja. And I cannot even take my breakfast. There is no question of lunch and dinner. First thing is a bath before sunrise. Friends in Tibet tried to help him that this is a different climate, totally different. You are in the land of eternal ice. Everything is frozen from eternity. Do you want to kill yourself? In 3 days, he had double pneumonia. He rushed back home. He said he will not reach alive if he lives more. scholarship is one thing, life I said it is good. In the morning you had gone wrong, in the evening you have come home. But now learn another lesson. Why you go on using the tie and the coat and the hat? Because you are a professor. When I went into the university with my lungi and a shawl, they were so sad that nobody had the courage even to ask what is the matter. Finally, the Vice Chancellor called me in his room, closed the door, because he knew that I may say something which may become troublesome, and he said, "This is too much." I said, "What is too much? I am being paid for my teachings, not for my clothes. And you cannot decide what I should wear. And if you insist, I will not wear anything." He said, "Wait. Something is good, better than nothing. You can do, but at least one thing, just to please me, don't use these wooden sandals, because they disturb the whole university. Wherever you go, for miles you can be heard that you are arriving." I said, "That is a question of principle. It is a question of religion." He said, "A question of religion? I never thought that. I have myself been a professor of philosophy and religion." I said, "You don't know much. In India, for thousands of years, the monks have used Hindu, Jain, Buddhist wooden sandals for the sake of being non-violent, because shoes are made of leather. Some animal has to be killed. It is not that I am mad. I am simply following a long tradition of all the greatest men born in this country." He said, "That's good. But do something that they don't make so much noise." It is because of him that I had to change from wooden sandals to rubber and to velvet But I have consistently been true to the idea that soothes, so your indifference to life. They are against anti-life. And I have used a special design for my soothes which keeps the feet completely open. So in heat, there is no need for me to perspire. Every child, if left and helped to grow according to his own sensibilities, will bring something beautiful in the world, some unique personality. Right now, everybody is a copy of everybody else. This very wise chancellor, when the first time I entered the university, looked at me and asked, "Why you are growing beard?" I said, "I am not growing, it is growing." Don't ask nonsense questions. On the contrary, I can ask, "Why you are cutting your beard?" He said, "Settled. I will not ask anything, and you will not ask anything." I said, "No. You can ask anything, but you have to have the courage to receive the answer. You have to say that you ask a wrong question. I am not growing. I am not pulling my hair every day, that they are growing. I am not watering them. You are shaving twice a day. My hairs are natural, and you are unnecessarily becoming a woman." He said, "What?" Said, "It is so easy to understand. Do you think a woman will look good with a beard?" The same is true about you. Without a beard, you look just like a woman. A little beard, but he said, "I have promised never to disturb you, but don't spread these ideas in the university that I look like a woman, a little beard. I lived as I wanted. I lived as naturally as I wanted. That has given me a tremendous sense of peace and integrity. There is no regret, there is no complaint against life, only deep gratitude. And I want every one of you to live only according to your own consciousness. And as your meditation will grow deeper, your consciousness will become wider live according to you, according to your consciousness, even if it goes against the whole world, only then you can feel a sense of reality, a sense of solidarity, a sense of individuality. Basu wrote, "I am a man who breakfasts with a view of morning glories opening in the dew." He is saying that he lives in the nature. "I am a man who breakfasts with a view of morning glories opening in the dew." In a very indirect way, in a poetic way, he is saying, "I am a natural man." Another Zen poet, "Among the greatest treasures to be found on earth, being of nothingness is the greatest." Just to be nothing. And you have the greatest treasure in existence. Meditation slowly, slowly makes you nothing. Nothingness is your original face, and it is the miracle that in nothingness you find everything. The whole world is yours. Manisha has asked, "Could it really be one day that enlightenment is seen as nothing is special? Could children live simply through awareness rather than conditioning, so that they pop off into nirvana almost as soon as they pop out into life?" Manisha, hope for the best and expect the worst. Samus is only 5 feet tall, but his girlfriend Glenda is 6'3". One night when the two sly lovers are walking by the barn, Samus asks for a kiss. Glenda consents. So Samus stands on an old tractor engine and gives her a little kiss. They walk on a couple of miles down the country lane, and Samus plucks up courage and asks Glenda for another kiss. "No," Glenda replies heartily, "I have given you all the kisses you are going to get tonight." "Okay." Then says Samus in disgust, "In that case I am not going one step further with this son of a bitch engine." He was carrying the engine with himself. wherever chance arises, Shamas or Rayan is feeling especially romantic. So he buys his girlfriend Peggy a bunch of roses. Peggy takes one look at the roses, smiles with a sly grin, and takes Shamas by the hand. She leads him slowly up the stairs to the bedroom, throwing off one piece of clothing at a time until she is completely naked. Then she lays seductively on the bed, strokes herself lightly and opens her legs. This is sure sexily. Is for the roses. Don't be silly, replies Shamas. They will last much longer in a vase. It is supper time for Jesus, his cousin Irwin, and the 12 apostles. They are dining at the deluxe pork and pie restaurant, and everyone is having a gay time. Vintage Arab wines are flowing like water. The fellows are stuffing themselves as the waitress bring course after course of exotic dishes. The party is reaching a crescendo as the orchestra strikes up a heart number and 3 dancing girls come in carrying a huge 200-pound stuffed pig. At this point, Peter raises his cup of wine and shouts, "A toast to Lord Jesus!" "Yes, yes," says Thomas, jumping up. "A toast to Lord Jesus!" Everyone raises their cups and shouts in unison, "To the Lord Jesus!" And they all drink. Curious, Cousin Irwin turns to Jesus and says, "How do you inspire such faithfulness in your men?" It is fucking simple, replies Jesus, pulling out his credit card. "It is either that or every Jew for himself." Now, Nivedana. silent. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be frozen. Collect all your life energy inside and move this inner force as deeper as possible, like an arrow, to reach the very source from where you have sprung and from where everything has sprung. Deeper and deeper, without any fear, be drowned in the source of your being. It will resurrect you. It will give you a rebirth. It will bring new qualities to blossom. More awareness, more silence, more blissfulness, more ecstasy. You have to carry this experience around 24 hours. This is the Buddha, the original man. Let this experience sink into every cell of your being, every nerve of your body. Once you know your Buddha, it starts radiating through your mind, through your body, all around you like an aura. A silent and peaceful light, a cool breeze. Follows you in every activity, just like your shadow. To make it deeper and to feel it more clearly, Nivedana, relax, let go. The body is there, the mind is there, but they are not you. You are the watcher. You are the witness. This witness is the highest growth of consciousness There is nothing beyond it. To remain a witness, awake or asleep, is the whole process of meditation. Because once you are full of awareness, witnessing, you cannot do anything that is wrong. You don't have to decide what is right, what is wrong. You simply do the right. It happens always to be the right. It is your spontaneity that blossoms like roses. Nivedana, come back, but come back like Buddhas, silently, peacefully, gracefully. Sit down for a few moments, relishing and grateful of the experience. Even for a single moment, if you can touch your Buddhahood, you have done a miracle. That single moment soon will become your whole life. Can we celebrate the gathering of the Buddhas?
Yes.